Podcast format.
Literally.
But I was telling you, like, as soon as you showed up at the front door today, I think it's, and we'll get to the intro in a second, but I think it is really funny and strange. And I wonder if you have this feeling too, in a positive way, I mean, meeting people in real life.
Oh, yeah.
That for the longest time you only know from their content.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Did you have a few experiences like that in LA?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Or traveling?
Yeah. I mean, you, obviously. But also, like, it's funny because sometimes you have online, you still have somewhat of a persona, you know? And I'm always surprised as to how chill and genuine people are.
Yeah.
Because when you do these videos, it's hard to showcase all of who you are.
Yeah.
You know, people always are surprised that I'm, not to brag, but I'm a lot deeper and wiser than people. Because I'm online just doing like the German accent. Now you kinky fucks, yeah, come here, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, they
you
have know? Like expectations of
exactly.
what you might actually be like based on the things you do. Yeah, totally.
But because I film myself doing like the fun stuff or doing stand-up, but for the most part, I'm a pretty chill guy, you know?
Yeah.
I drink tea, I don't party, you know? So it's like a bit of it's always interesting to seeing the person you know from online, but then getting to know the real person that's behind the online persona, because you only share a fraction of who you are online. Yeah,
exactly. I often get confused, like not confused for, but most people I meet for the first time, maybe not like fellow creators like you, because we'll talk on the phone and stuff first, but just people on the street that might know me from something are sometimes shocked or even disappointed that I'm not actually German.
Oh,
they really won't know, which I think is funny, because I will talk pretty regularly online as I do now, you know? Or one time I did a video where I was doing like the German guy talking to the American guy.
Yeah.
And one of the comments was, wow, your American accent is unbelievable, dude.
It's unbelievable, dude. But dude, I'm not gonna lie, when you speak English, you have a slight German accent.
I keep hearing that now.
I mean, but that's what people tell me, because English is not my first language, German is. But when I speak German, people tell me that I have an American accent now. You know,
probably
I'll just say, hallo,
yeah,
wie geht's dir heute? Marco, liberal to ruin the country. Urgh, you know, I just, it happens.
Wow, it's subtle. Dude, unbelievable. It's subtle. Accent is spot on, bro.
It's just subtle, but you know, it happens, yeah.
Dude, that's so funny. I don't know how to pinpoint what it is. I don't know if it's just like trying to be more careful with the words I say, because sometimes that's
you
like
just
a
said
second language thing.
With words I say. I mean, it sounds.
I didn't say with the words.
You said it just now. You said with the words.
No way, man. My friend Vivi, she's from Spain, and the last time I saw her, she was like, you know, when you say ya now.
Ya.
I was like, no, nein.
No, nein.
Nein.
It just sounded like, it's funny also, once you sound a little bit more gay, you sound more German also, you know? Say ya.
Bitte nicht.
Yeah. Please no. You know.
No, but dude, so this is, you say Adrian or you say Mario Adrian?
Well, it's actually a French last name, so if you want to sound French and cool and pretentious, you say Adrian.
Adrian.
But we're in America, goddammit, so we say Adrian.
This is Mario Adrian.
Mario Adrian.
A German American icon, stand-up comedian, former model.
Yeah.
But I mean, do you still model at all?
Not
or you
really.
Keep yourself in the shape. I think you're 30, 29, 30?
30. Just turned 30, yeah.
Isn't that young to stop? Or you stopped because you didn't enjoy it anymore?
Oh, no. Modeling, when you have to. I know people who retire from modeling when they're 23 because they're too old.
Really?
Like women. For women, it's tougher. Women, like, really, at 26, is kind of like you retire. You're closing in on retirement. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Oh, my God.
Well, but depending what kind of modeling you do, right? There's, like, commercial modeling, which is more like, you know, I did some jobs for Adidas. Not Adidas. Adidas.
Adidas. The first
Adidas.
Time I heard that, I got so mad.
For the Adidas.
Adidas.
Adidas. Yeah, again, sounds more gay again. Adidas. But I don't know. I still do modeling, but not as... if I get a job, I'll do it, right? But I'm not starving myself going to Fashion Week, because that's what I used to do. I used to go to Milan and New York Fashion Week, and it was... it's not a cool lifestyle. They told me always I was too big. And I'm like, I was never
so
a
lean.
Big guy. I'm lean, but I was like,
you're muscular.
They told me my chest was too big. Because if you want to be a fashion model, like the runway stuff, you have to be. I mean, it's changing.
Like
it might
almost,
be changing.
Right?
Yeah, they like heroin chic. Like in London, especially, they like, and in Paris. Paris was the, I never worked in Paris for like Fashion Week because I was too big. And I'm like almost 200 pounds now. Back, so I'm gonna do kilograms. So I'm like 90 kilograms right now, something like that. I was 75, so I was 15 kilograms. I was like between now.
Like 30, 35 pounds less.
30 pounds less than now.
That's insane.
Is what I was when I was actively modeling. So I don't miss that time at all.
But has that been gained in muscle? Because you don't look, I mean, you still have such a six pack. It's not like you have a huge body fat percentage.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I gained more muscle also.
It's more muscle.
A little bit of fat too, probably, but just healthier. I feel
just healthier.
Yeah, because my diet, it was just like, it was not good, you know?
Do you keep up with, I mean, maybe keep up's the wrong word, but like there's a few pretty funny fashion models that I see on TikTok. Like there's the skinny redheaded.
Yeah, I just found him.
He's so funny.
He's awesome. I love, you know what I like about him? And that's kind of like my brand too. I hated the stereotype of models being these vain, self-obsessed, serious people, because the truth is most models are pretty silly that I've met.
Yeah,
I mean, mind you, there's some douchebags, but like for the most part. So I love that this guy's breaking the stereotype of what models are allowed to portray on the internet, because he works for Prada and Gucci and all these brands,
like pretty big,
but he's so silly and goofy.
Yeah,
like I saw some videos he made. He's like a British guy, right? He does like the videos. Yeah, awesome. I love this guy. I mean, immediately I was like, oh, great that he's very similar to my brand when I was modeling, honestly, because I was the silly German who was like a model, but I was more. He's more like, I mean, he's way more successful than I ever was as a model. But I did more like underwear stuff and more. I just had more of a body. I was more of a like that kind of model, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but I love breaking the stereotype of like then being like the guy who's like, it's me, Mario, and like being silly, oh. You know.
Do you know that the TikTok sound of the like the Patrick Bateman scene in American Psycho where they showcase the cards and mm-hmm. people will use that sound to represent something in their business? Do you know that?
No.
Have you seen that film, American Psycho?
You know, it's the one where Tom Cruise running around in his underwear or something?
No. It's Christian Bale playing
Christian Bale. The killer. I'm so off. You know what? No, I haven't. I tell you, I know you went to film school. Gotta be honest with you. Love films. Have not seen that many.
Oh, no worries.
Just because,
no
like, worries. I don't know. I grew up in Germany, so I watched, like, everything with David Hasselhoff.
And Tagesschau.
Exactly. Tagesschau. But I'm, like, a little uneducated when it comes to American classics, like especially Disney. I didn't grow up with that at all.
Yeah.
I've never seen Aladdin. I've never seen a lot of movies. So like,
thanks for saying Aladdin, not Aladdin. Aladdin. Losers. Aladdin.
Aladdin.
I told a German friend that it's not Yasmin, it's Jasmine, and he goes, "What is she, a whore?"
Jesus.
It's Aladdin and Jasmine, man.
Mean. Yeah. Well, that one I get behind because it's like, you know. It's an American. Disney is American, right?
It is, dude. So, yeah. Well, the reason I brought up that movie scene is basically that fashion model. What's it? Caleb?
Caleb Harper, I think.
Caleb. Yeah. He used that trending sound to make a funny thing. Instead of using business cards, he used headshots with him and another model.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so funny to see the difference because he's clearly a funny, I think he'd be enjoyable to be around kind of guy.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Then you see the headshots and mm-hmm. it's all the sunken, like
the sunken cheeks, the mewing thing.
You know, it's like such a different world.
That's
you know?
The thing, because he looks kind of like a silly, he looks kind of goofy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He looks more like a funny different. Dude, but then when he puts the runway look on, he's just like transforms. But that's kind of like the truth of modeling, you know? Like when I was doing photo shoots, they would always, like, you would put on, like, you know, a Zoolander, right?
With the blue steel. Oh, sure, yeah.
So you can transform, you know? Like, I'm a silly guy and stuff, and on stage I make expressions, but then when you turn a camera on, you fucking, you know, you bite your jaw a little bit, you know?
Oh, sure.
Get it at an angle, you know? You kind of know how to, like, get into that persona and drop in.
Sure.
It's very, it's very transformational, yeah.
Did you have these, like, memorized... I saw a thing once about people teaching it, like, a total amateur to do, like, a... like a bodybuilding position where it was like you have these like the tricep thing, the something triangle, the something mm-hmm. circle. Like did you have these also for your kind of modeling?
Yeah, because I did some modeling which is like so one type of modeling that I did a lot is it's like catalogs, like it's called e-com, where you just do Bloomingdale's. You know, I did a lot of Bloomingdale's. That's one client I had. Great, they were awesome. I did some one in Germany too for like Puma, for Adidas. And for you know, stuff like that. And then what you have to do is you just go through like 50 outfits a day, you know, for mm-hmm. like an online lookbook. So you change outfits and then you go and you just have the pose. You have the straight arm, you have the side, you grab your wrist, you kind of put the hand in pocket, you put the hand behind your head.
Oh, yeah.
And you just go, it's like very mechanical where you just go through these like a robot.
Yeah.
And the craziest thing is in Asia, I modeled in South Korea and in China also.
Okay,
here's the thing. America, people like make a lot of fun of like America, the work culture, people work too much, they're like overworked, all this stuff. When it comes to modeling, America was the best country to work in because they treat models very well for the most part, except for some people who like sexually harass you. But than that, like for big corporations like Bloomingdale's, very sweet, gave you lunch and stuff like that. In China, you go through like, no joke, 80, 90 outfits a day. Meaning it's like you're like 80, a robot.
80, 90 outfits a day.
Yeah, a day. So you work like, you know, whatever, 8-9 hours, but like nonstop. And 8-9 hours means you work. Because when I went in China, I took a break to go to the bathroom. They put a clock. They stop your time.
Oh my God.
And then when you come back, they resume. It's insane. It's very it's very strict. Yeah, it's very terrifying. Don't recommend. China was my least favorite place to ever go and model in general.
How much did you work in China?
Not that much. I stayed in Hong Kong for a bit. It's not China, but then I did jobs like more like one-off jobs where they sent me there for like a few days to shoot every day, you know?
Yeah.
And then you make a good amount of money and come back. I worked more in Asia. I worked in Singapore, which is amazing, and South Korea. These were great.
Where was I guess it's project to project, but where was the most consistently best money?
New York, for me personally, because I had e-commerce, which is like, you know, Bloomingdale's, they would hire me like weekly or sometimes for a full week and get paid. I mean, at that time, you know, I was young, they pay you pretty well. The rates are like, I mean, I don't forget, I can talk about the rates now, who cares? But like, you know, it's like maybe 1500 a day, 1000, depending on half day, full day. And it's literally consistent because they book you like, and then you pay 20%. But the thing is like, you know, you pay 20% to your manager and to your mother agent, and like to your, depending on the agency, 25%, 30% sometimes.
Okay,
so, and then taxes. So it's not that, you know, it sounds great. And a lot of work goes into it on the front end because you have to invest time going to these castings. You get rejected 20 times before you actually get booked for a job.
Plus, isn't it your brain kind of always on the clock in terms of thinking about how your body should look in case you get something?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that fear of like, well, I can't have that because I have a casting I might get in 2 days.
Yeah, I'm way more relaxed now. And you know what's funny? I was so obsessed with my diet and I'm still very healthy. You know what I mean? I eat very clean.
Sure, sure.
Of course. But not because I want to look good necessarily, just because I feel better. Yeah. Genuinely. I mean, I'm just used to this lifestyle now. And it's truly, I think it's great. There's a balance though when you go too hard. Like I would not, yesterday at Oktoberfest, for example, I was there and we had like, I ate pretty clean, you know, I had like a half chicken, like the handle.
Sure.
And it's not too bad. But then I had we ordered the dessert plate with like the Dampf noodle and the Apfelstrudel and the vanilla cream. And it was awesome. And I had it and I was thinking like, if I was modeling still actively, I would have thought about, oh, I might have, you know, to submit some like last minute digital like Polaroids, like photos, how you look like in the moment. Yeah. Any day, at any time.
They would ask you to send stuff in the moment?
Oh yeah, if a casting comes up for like, they might be like, hey Mario, you know, we have a big option for you for like, you know, Calvin Klein, not that I ever got that, but you know, I've done castings for them and stuff like that for an underwear thing and we need your avails right now. So they
you would you like need, if you're at a friend's house for dinner, you'd have to go to their bathroom, get in your underwear and take and like crunch and like take a photo?
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
That's insane, Mario.
That's how the industry works. I mean,
so scary. They feel like you can be called anytime.
It happened quite a bit where like you need a last, or like sometimes a video. You know, sometimes they want to see a little video of you doing almost like a casting, right? For like an acting thing too. You submit a little video, like a tape. Sometimes just of you like walking. And I didn't have a home for 7-8 years because I was modeling. I was traveling all the time. Mm-hmm. So I've done videos of me in underwear in the most random place you can imagine. In some back alley somewhere in Seoul, South Korea. You know,
oh my I just God.
Put up and my camera, put up my phone right there. And I'd like, I'm already, yeah, exactly. I'm already sticking out. Imagine you're in Seoul. You're like
just a wholesome getting home from his work at the restaurant. And you see this 7-foot-tall German guy in his underwear.
Yep. Yeah. That was a wild time. But no, it's nice. God. And you know what's funny? I was so obsessed about it. And had a little body issues too, because you think you're good looking, but then you do modeling and you're like, oh,
shit.
And
you see someone else.
Yeah,
and
there's levels to this, you know?
That's probably refreshing for a lot of people to remember too, because the easy thing to assume is that if someone looks the way you do, that there's no more insecurity. But probably in that industry, it's constant insecurity. 100%.
Yeah. That's why I have this joke in modeling. It's my closer where I'm like, you know, when I was modeling in New York, I was a 5, and that's why I'm doing stand-up comedy now.
That's solid.
Because now amongst other male comics, I can finally be a 10, you know?
Yeah, dude. And there's you, Matt Rife, and that's it. Or maybe Kamel Nanjiani now.
Well, there's yeah, no, he's good looking. I mean, he's got a crazy body too, yeah.
He really transformed, yeah, and he stayed that way.
Yeah, yeah.
For a movie that wasn't good.
Yeah, no. Was it Eternals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That movie got panned.
Yeah.
And he was, I remember, well, it's a whole different thing, but he was like doing press tours internationally for it as the critics were coming in saying this is like the biggest piece of shit ever. Mm-hmm. And he had to like pretend that that wasn't the case while going out and like saying, go on out there and watch that movie, you know?
Ugh. Oh, that's always tough.
It's a tough story.
Like Madame Web, I wonder how they like sold that because it's like, it was so clear, but I loved it because it was so campy that I liked
it. It's pretty,
you know what I mean?
If you see it in that way, then it's kind of great.
It's great in that way. But if you go in like thinking like, oh, this is the new Spider-Man, you're like, you know, oh, I don't know.
that's nasty. Yeah. I won't drag the whole thing about modeling out too long, but I you probably didn't see it, but do you know the movie Triangle of Sadness?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, the opening thing, H&M and Balenciaga.
My life.
How real is that? And did you like that representation?
Oh, 100%. It was great. And you know what's funny? I felt a little misled by the movie trailer because I thought the whole movie was going to be about modeling. And then it was about a boat. I don't want to spoil it too much, but
I love that movie.
No, it's a fantastic movie, but
they can't tell you the whole thing in that trailer. It's such a different story.
Oh, yeah, it's a very different story. But anyways, but I liked it anyways. But no, that representation of like you have a happy face, because modeling truly has, there's two sides. There's commercial modeling and there's high fashion modeling. You know, and high fashion is like Balenciaga, Prada, Gucci, Armani.
Everyone's still like serious and so it's so shouldered.
Exactly, exactly. Very fashion, very serious, very like, in a way, like very douchey. It's like, it takes itself so seriously.
It's very serious.
And then you have the commercial stuff, which I've done a good...
Like new autumn fits from H&M.
Exactly.
This fall for $189.
Exactly. However, no, H&M is pretty... H&M is the brand that is not as expensive, but their branding is very high fashion. Same as Zara. Zara looks like Prada. You know, their ads and stuff look very like high-end. But like commercial would be something like Old Navy, maybe, you know. Old
Navy,
it's a little bit on the, maybe even more commercial would be something like you know, like a lifestyle, what's the thing, like a backpack brand where you just like, you know, with your friends, you're like smiling, you know, with a backpack,
like you and your friends doing the hike for Patagonia or something.
Exactly,
like
something like that. Yeah, some of them are a little bit of, what's like even more like just cheesy, or like commercials, you know, if you have like actual commercials for like brands. But some of them in America, maybe they're
like
all
Hanes
a little bit,
or like Fruit of the Loom or something.
Exactly, something like that, or even like lifestyle stuff, like, you know, it might be like a watch or something, or but then in America, they tend to not be as cheesy. But in Asia, yo, there's some ads that are just like, I was like, are you guys serious right now? It's the most cheesy, in your face, kind of weird, but it's they like that stuff.
What did they want? What was some stuff they wanted you to do?
Oh, it's the vibe in general, but like, let me think. I did one for a brand called Hush Puppies. I did a full campaign for Southeast Asia, like Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, all this stuff, right? Vietnam, Thailand. And they just had me, what was it? Like, they had a kid, and I looked, by the way, I looked, I can send you photos if you want to put them up there. I looked 12. I looked young, because I was, I was actually probably 20, but I looked very young as a kid. I aged, like, later. I had, like, a bit of baby fat and chubbier cheeks, and I just looked so Asian.
Okay.
It's unbelievable how
really?
They made me dye my hair black, and then sometimes they made me, no joke, they were like, can you... It's a little weird, but like they did it, so it's fine. They were like, "Hey, can you squint
your eyes?"
I'm not joking. I'm gonna show you some photos after, and I'm not kidding, dude. They made me look. They gave me,
dude.
I did Asian face. I did, dude, straight up Asian face.
It's not racist if they make you do it.
It literally. I was just following orders. Yeah, what can I do? Yeah, I was just following orders.
I do as I'm told.
Yeah, they told me to. I do.
Damn,
it.
Damn, dude.
I don't know what that's to do. And but they had a kid. I almost want to show you.
That's crazy.
I have my phone here. I can pull it up.
That is really crazy. Oh my God! You look like an Asian, like Billy Joe Armstrong.
Isn't that wild?
That's crazy.
I look,
man,
like a K-pop. I look like an anime character.
So this, wow, is like
a lookbook. This is actually for a big magazine.
It does
there.
Look really anime. Wow.
It looks so anime, right?
The outfits are kind of dope.
I don't know if
though.
You can see how skinny I am. I mean,
you're very thin.
You
yeah.
see the clothing, but like, you know. And this is me for a campaign for Hush Puppies.
Is that you?
That's me. Isn't that crazy?
What?
Isn't that ridiculous?
It's like a Disney kid.
It's like a Disney, but I look younger than this girl. You know what I'm saying? But look how pretty this girl is.
Yeah, she's cute.
And then this little kid, the devil. Don't
really?
Like this kid at all. Oh my God, he was beating me, punching me the whole time. But yeah, it's just very cheesy. Everything is like very in your face, happy, very campy. You know what
and
I mean?
You were 20 there? This is,
yeah,
I was playing one of the kids.
No, I'm a dad.
You're the dad
I'm
here?
I'm the dad. Yeah, this is a family. So this girl here, she's from Hungary. She's a model. And
but she looks mom. You look like oldest son.
Yeah.
That's wild.
I know.
That's crazy, dude.
It's really crazy, yeah. And then like, you know.
You have to send these. Yeah, yeah. See, now this looks like, more, the hair looks really suspicious for a German man.
Well, there's like, these are old, I mean, this is crazy stuff I did. This is for a Lady Gaga music video with Steven Klein.
Look at the, is that a wig fishnets. Or is that your hair pushed back?
No, this is my hair. They gave me hair, like a, it was like a helmet on my
like
hair.
It looks like a sumo wig that they like glued on. It
was
crazy.
Really crazy. Yeah, this is now. But yeah, it was wild. These are some old photos.
Damn, dude, that's nuts.
This is me, my first runway show in New York.
What was this for?
This is for
and you had the tattoo already
Korean,
way back then.
For a Korean designer. Yeah.
Dang,
but you see,
dude.
I'm like skinny. I mean, this is not, maybe not the lowest I went, but you can see how like I'm pretty skinny there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It almost looks more androgynous for sure, but yeah.
And but this hair thing was a wig that the
they put hair extension like Naruto, like Naruto, you know.
Oh yeah.
Like Naruto, yeah, hair extensions. Yeah.
What was like the most embarrassing sort of fashion catwalk? If that's the right term.
Probably that one.
For you and how you looked?
Because like also, I don't know if you saw, but I was wearing white briefs. So he also...
You're not wearing much.
to also backpedal a little bit. This is my first runway show, okay, ever in New York. Just started modeling then. I was probably 19 then. Just went to New York from Germany.
So young.
I was studying in Berlin. I was supposed to become a German engineer. Yeah, I was studying international business and engineering.
The way God intended.
Exactly, the way God...
You followed the devil's temptations, exactly. And that's where you ended up.
I was being a good German. I was following the two German paths of engineer or techno DJ. And I was doing well. I did very well in school, by the way. Just want to throw it out there. I was very smart, but then I realized
I've been living in America for a while now, throwing the brags out. I'm just kidding.
But then I was realized that I was too hot to be educated. And then I was like, you know what? Let's use these looks. Let's put them to work, baby.
We're so. Very different sides of the sofa here. Too hot to be educated. That's great.
I was like, this is not my path.
That's so funny.
This is not my path. And then... went there, and that was crazy because I did a casting and a fitting. Fitting means you go to a runway casting and they put clothing on you to see how it fits, right?
Okay.
And they put a big jacket on me. You know, like it was like a shark skin. Very avant-garde, you know? It was a Korean designer. His name is, I think, Edmund Oi. Great guy, but very like high fashion. You know, nothing you would necessarily wear in public, you know?
Yeah,
it's very,
exactly.
Like that kind of stuff. So then I was like, oh, cool, I'm wearing the shark skin thing. And they were like, cool. Then I get there, I'm opening the show. Which is a big deal because it means like you're the coolest kid on the block if you're opening or closing.
That's
by the
nuts,
way.
Dude. Yeah.
So I'm opening the show. And then when they get there, it's like, oh, here's your outfit. And it's like literally a bra. You know, like you saw this thing. I don't know what it is.
It's like a sexy mummy.
Yeah. Sexy mummy. You're right.
Like, let's unravel a little more.
Mama, yeah. And then just like the white, tiny Speedo kind of thing.
That's nuts, dude.
Pretty see-through. And then you're like, it's cold in there. And
sure.
And then also the runway.
And the
was,
lights and the music and the music, eyeballs.
And it was confusing because, and also like I couldn't see because the hair was covering my face pretty much.
Yeah.
And these boots were heavy and the runway was not just like a straight shot, you know? I mean, you know, usual runways you want.
Yeah,
then
like it's a turning point.
Exactly.
Right?
Run on a turning point or like you stop and pivot and then go back. This one was like, it was a maze. I'm not
really?
Kidding. It was like there was mirrors everywhere and you had to go in like a weird H shape and then go back that way. It was very confusing just from a actual like choreography standpoint. I don't want to oversell it because I've dancer friends, they have actual choreo, but it was still...
But still, if you don't have time to run it a bunch of times to get used to it...
Yeah, plus...
The pressure.
And then the shrinkage and you thinking happy thoughts because you want to look good, you know what I mean? It's my first show. It was a lot and that was very weird. And also the fact that I got there thinking it was going to be a chill coat moment, you know? And then I'm basically half naked on that runway. But hey, I pulled it off. It was good. It was good.
Man, and did you ever see some just absolute disasters from other models in these things, or is it usually pretty smooth?
More like female models, because they have high heels. I've seen a lot of models.
Cracked heels.
Yeah, cracked heels, because that is another level. And everything I went through, basically what I'm saying is, like, you know, I'm complaining here about, because modeling is a tough industry and stuff like that. And, you know, you have, you know, it's just tough to be ridiculously good looking.
It's just so hard to be beautiful because no one takes you seriously.
No, but as a woman, it's even the whole body image thing too. As a woman,
sure,
like
sure.
Take that times 100 plus. Women at large, not just in modeling, women in general.
Yeah, just large women.
Large women, yes. I'm sorry. Large women at large deal with this a lot. No, but you objectified as a woman whether you're a model or not. But I dealt with it because I was a model, and like valued for my looks more than anything, right?
Sure.
Which is, so I can emphasize with women more, which is a good thing. But yeah, so I think cracked heels and stuff, like, women definitely had more of that issue. Yeah,
dude, that must be such a terrifying feeling stepping into that world. But like, now I'll ask one more time: were you decided this is something you want to try, and you went into your first casting, or were you discovered?
I was discovered on Facebook. I posted I posted a thirst trap accidentally of me at a swimming pool, and I had abs.
Like, accidentally.
I was doing martial arts when I was in Peru when I was like 16. So I developed a pretty good body, and I was at the lumberjack genetics from my parents. Like, my mom and my parents, like, they come from a lineage of lumberjacks, basically.
Really?
Like Holzfäller in Germany. Yeah.
Oh wow.
So I don't know, I just was very active working outside with them and stuff like that, so I was pretty healthy. And then I posted a photo at a local swimming pool, mm-hmm. and I had like abs, mm-hmm. and then I posted, and the photo, you know how the internet works, even back then, this is like 2014 or something, mm-hmm. and then they would just be like, photographers would post, or people would post the photo on these Facebook groups. And it ended up on one of them, which is called Hot German Hunks.
Oh my God, you got reposted to a pretty nasty group,
and
huh?
very gay site, right? But, I mean, the cool thing is that some dude, like, from New York, he's a modeling scout from New York, he messaged me, was like, hey, gorgeous.
He's like, I caught you from Hot German Hunks.
Exactly, yeah. And he was like, hey, do you want to come to New York and be a model? P.S., you can stay at my place in Harlem.
So, suspicious right off the bat.
Yeah.
And you said yes?
Listen.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I come from a small town called Alpisbach im Hochschwarzwald. We have essentially no crime, you know?
Right.
Like, you come from the absolute, you know, like, creme filthiest place in the world, which is Norton. I'm kidding. But, you know, it's pretty...
Norton's pretty
bad. Yeah, it's pretty bad. You have, like, a lot of crime and stuff. So, like, I'm very naive. I'm very optimistic. I always believe in the good of people. And I'm young. And I didn't know... And honestly, I thought Harlem was the coolest place, too. I didn't know what Harlem was. I didn't know that Harlem was also not a good place in America. You know, I was like, Harlem was so exotic. Yeah. So I went to New York, and literally, like, it was funny. At the time, I was dating a girl. I just came back from, and I had no money. I had like 1,000 euros in my bank account, mm-hmm. from like lumberjacking jobs and whatever I did, some odd jobs in Germany. And I flew to New York, got a ticket for, like, you know, whatever it was, 500 euros, and had no money. Flew there and gave it a shot.
What did your parents say about it?
My parents are very, like, I love it. My mom and my dad are very, especially my mom. Like, I grew up, they split up when I was young, and my mom especially is very just hands off.
Okay.
Very hands off. Like, I think Germans raise their kids a little differently too. Mm-hmm. It's less protective in a way. Just make your own experiences, you know. Mm-hmm. And also, like, from coming from a small town, my mom was totally cool with it. She was like, "Yeah, do your thing, whatever." You know, okay. I was very independent from a young age because they split up. I was basically kind of raising myself. I'm an only child too,
okay.
So I was cooking for myself a lot. I traveled when I was 15 to Peru,
right,
for 1 year.
You'd already done that.
I did student exchange at 13. I went to Lyon, Paris for 3 months. So I've traveled a lot by myself. Mm-hmm. So my parents just trust me, you know. So maybe they should have been a bit more protective at some points. But you know what? Even the bad stuff that happened, I feel like I learned from it. It's all been good. So yeah, went there. My parents were cool with it, and I just met this guy. He introduced me to some photographers.
Yeah.
And I eventually got signed with my first agency in New York.
Man, shortly that's thereafter. Incredible.
But I did stay at a studio apartment in the same bed as him.
Was it?
But that's the price you pay.
Cool?
Whatever, it was fine. He never tried anything, you know, but it was a little weird because he also, I mean, this is a little strange, but he became like my Mr. Miyagi.
Okay.
He taught me how to model.
Okay.
You know, so he would, like, I'd be in his studio apartment in Harlem, and I'd be in my underwear, uh-huh. and I'd be oiled up, and I would, like, walk the runway, you know, and he'd give me notes on my walk. And I was like, why do I have to be in underwear? And you know, he was like, it's fashion. We have to, in order for me to know that you're comfortable in clothing, we have to know that you're comfortable without clothing. And I was like,
okay,
that makes perfect sense. Yeah. So we continue the training.
Like, well, can I wear the underwear now?
Exactly.
We have to make sure you're really, 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 no, really
for your casting for Old Navy, we need to see you fully nude.
To know to that make you're sure. comfortable with clothes.
Exactly.
To know that you're comfortable completely butt naked.
Yeah. Listen.
Now let me apply more oil.
Yeah. So some of those things happen. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things compared to some other things I've gone through, pretty, pretty chill. And he was pretty cool. And then, you know, he just, it's just, a little, people are a little weird, but fashion is a weird place.
Fashion is a really
it's a weird
place.
Industry.
Yes.
Which also is why I kind of, which is why I quit also at the end, in a way. Because it's also, it was not fulfilling in a way where, like, it's not creatively fulfilling as much. Mm-hmm. That's why I started YouTube early on.
Yeah, this is also what I wanted. Like, yeah. When did you shift into this, your first fashion YouTube channel? Like, when did you switch into making content about what you were doing?
Pretty soon, I think. I mean, I done some, when I was in Germany, I did some videos. I always loved storytelling on YouTube. And I did one, I remember this one, I was like, we did a thing about how to apply for a job. And we did creative applications when I was in like maybe eighth grade or something in Germany.
Yeah.
Like I was like maybe, I don't know, 12 or 13. And then we basically, I did one and it was a video thing. I used Windows Movie Maker and I made an application of why, how I want to be the president of Germany.
Okay.
You know, and I made it very patriotic and very funny. And I loved, and I got a, like, a, and my teacher was like, oh my God, this is really like, you're very good at this. Cause like this kind of silly comedic story with music and stuff, basically making a YouTube video, you know?
Yeah.
So I loved it then. And then I made some, before I even started modeling, I made some videos about like, I was into fitness and working out and stuff. I made some videos about how to make Indian lentil curry. Like I made some cooking videos in German, but always kind of comedic. And then I didn't do anything for a few years. And then when I started modeling, I was like, I just made one video. It's called What Really Happens in New York Fashion Week. Because I wanted to go viral, just because like I wanted to have a memory of what it was like.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's share that with people. And I didn't have any intention of ever becoming, you know, a YouTuber or anything. It was not really a thing back then. And I uploaded it, didn't check it for a few weeks, checked back like 2 weeks later, had like, you know, 100,000 views, which is crazy back then.
Really
for like a long form YouTube video. And then I got all these comments of people, hey, what's your workout routine? How do you become a model? Like I found a community of people who were interested in modeling, because there's not really a male model, except for Zoolander. There was not a real person actually talking about it.
Right. Yeah.
So I did it and it was very successful. And I traveled the world and that kind of saved me, because it took away the pressure from having to succeed in modeling, because I was building something.
Yeah, you're building a community
that I
based
owned.
Around. Yeah, exactly.
And that's not dependent on a casting director liking me or not.
Right, right.
And there's less power dynamics and less gatekeepers. It's just, I own it. And
it
was more fulfilling creatively. So that's when I started and did like a Zoolander type YouTube channel.
I love it when people who are in a position like doing, I mean, I think doing what you do is a creative job. Like when you were modeling, I think that is in itself also a creative thing. But you, like you said, have so much less control over the output of like what you're giving out to other people. It's very controlled and manufactured by others. So I always like that story when people end up shifting into a job where they are in complete control of what the brand is and what the content is and that you enjoy doing it. Also, like I always had day jobs at restaurants and cafes, and very different story from yours, but just always under someone's control, so to say, like always a boss. And even if they were a cool boss, sometimes I just really hated having them as a boss.
Mm-mm.
And then when I was able to switch into making my own, you know, music or going now into to content creation, dude, just the switch into like making your own schedule and like having, you know, agencies who could support you. And if you say, no, I don't want to do that, they say, cool, you know, like no problem. You know, it's just a much more relieving position to be
in. It is nice. Depends on your personality, though. I think some people also struggle with that responsibility. Some people like structure,
and
they want to have a little bit. I have some friends, like my editor, for example, he's a great guy, but he's like a person who like kind of needs that structure of somebody else. But for sure, like the independence and it's more fulfilling when you, and that's why I think so many people are depressed in their jobs, because they don't feel like they have a sense of, you know, choice. They just, you know, following orders and it's not.
Yeah. guys, following orders is pretty outdated these days.
Yeah.
Okay.
And didn't
they
end
tried
well.
It. It didn't work. Never out did. Right. Look what happened to that guy. Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's really nuts, dude. And then so you were doing YouTube, and then when did you quit fashion officially? And were you already going into stand up then?
Oh, no. Stand-up is a very new thing.
Okay.
But
okay.
I've always been silly. That's the thing. I've always liked it. And I've always kind of done it in videos. But it wasn't until like maybe 4 years. It was right around the pandemic, like when the pandemic already kind of started in LA. I did improv. I loved improv.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Improv, you know, like a Second City in LA. It's a great place.
Oh, yeah.
They closed it now. But anyway, so.
When did they close Second City?
Oh, God. They were hit with a trifecta of COVID, a sexual harassment scandal, and like a Black Lives Matter kind of related thing. They were hit with a trifecta of cancellations.
Shit.
They were like, never reopened.
Gone. I didn't know that.
The LA one. I mean, Chicago is open. Toronto's okay. open. They have one in, they're opening one in New York right now.
Okay. Okay.
So it's great. I love Second City. Basically, they did, I did improv there. And the live performance aspect of having a crowd of people, even if it's like 15 people.
Dude, that instant gratification of knowing that you made them laugh.
It's human connection, too. It's unbelievable. It's an energetic thing. I don't want to get too spiritual, but it's truly like. And okay, I'm gonna get spiritual.
Do it, man.
All right.
It's a podcast.
I had an experience. I did, I've done it one time. I did a mushroom journey, right? Mm-hmm. Like a heroic dose of mushrooms. And I.
We've all been there.
And I had an eye mask on. I saw myself on stage and I realized, you know, we're all one. I don't wanna bore people with like, but we had ego death. I was gone. I realized we're all one. There is no you and I. We're all the same, right? And I saw this guy in the crowd and I was on stage and he was wearing like a Cubs, like I don't know, he was wearing like a baseball hat and like chains. Somebody, for some reason, I wouldn't necessarily connect with because we have different personas, right? In the, in the real world, we're disconnected because of our egos and what we represent. But then I made a joke and we both laughed and we connected. In that moment, we became one.
Right.
All the racial differences, whatever, sexuality, political views, all that stuff is not real. It's all gone in the moment when you laugh with somebody.
Yeah.
And that's what's really beautiful about stand-up. It's really about connection when you think about it. So, I don't know, it's just something about that. Even when I make a YouTube video that gets like a million views,
right?
It's cool, but it's not nearly as beautiful as when I make, when I have one of my shows on my tour right now.
Yeah.
And I have a room full of like 100 people.
Yeah,
and
dude.
We all have a good time. That's like the best, you know?
Dude, I'm telling you, like it's, I completely agree with that. It's so next level to, that's exactly also why I started going into live shows, which is just that, exactly what you said. You can get a good view count on a video. You can see followers grow or whatever. And it sounds so superficial or like it doesn't mean something to me. But still, at the end of the day, you see numbers enough times and they start to stop representing people.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if you look at comments, sometimes it doesn't feel like real people.
Yeah, yeah.
After enough, you know, after you start having to turn off, like, I'm sure you have it too, like when the app notifications have to be turned off.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you open it up, you just see this, like, it just kind of stops seeing like real interaction. So you move it to the live stage and like you said, 10 people, 300 people, whatever. If you have that engagement, that laughter, man, it's just incredible. That's also something I missed about doing live music. Like, it's just this engagement and this connection to people.
Yeah.
And it feels so much better than whatever, how many likes you get on something.
100%. Well, music is so interesting because I was just in Nashville, as I mentioned, and I'm kind of jealous of musicians in a way, but also I love how efficient comedy is. You don't have to bring them like sound check, no band, no equipment. You just show up.
So
I show up with a microphone in Nashville. I had a show there at Zany's, showed up with a microphone and just did my thing.
Yeah.
However, the music, when I watched these, like it was not, it was like Americana, I guess, but it was so beautiful. And like the way they connected without a rational barrier, because like you connect with stand up, but like it's kind of rational still. Music just is a frequency that just gets you, you know?
Yes,
I mean?
Absolutely.
And that's quite beautiful. I was like, that's, but very similar. I mean, musicians, that's why I feel very connected to musicians. So I talked to some of these guys after. I was like, essentially the same thing we're doing, just different mediums, you know?
Dude, do you know that expression that comedians want to be musicians and musicians want to be comedians?
Yeah.
That's so true. It becomes more and more true, I feel like, you know? It's weird to have gone from one to the other, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
But whenever I see other musicians and they tell them, they'd meet me from the social media stuff, I can tell they're being as funny as they can, not forced, but you can tell they're trying to get me to like find them very funny sometimes, which is great because I love to laugh. And then vice versa, like when I'm meeting a musician, I need them to know that like I love that that thing you did because I know what you did and that's cool how you did it.
I
find myself also nerding out the opposite direction.
Yeah,
but I love that. I love musicians and comedians are always so usually pretty cool people.
Yeah,
usually. But as within, there are some dicks.
Yeah. I think musicians are cooler in general. Like comedians are a little they're more mysterious, more cool, right? Comedians are kind of like, a lot of comedians also like the stereotype is like, you know, not as like cool or attractive necessarily, you know? Mm-hmm. It's never like, the musician is the one you want to like, you know, you're afraid your wife is going to like, you know, sleep with, you know, that kind of thing. You're like, yeah. Right? A musician is like, oh my God, you know, that kind of the groupies and stuff like that. Comedians... I don't know if like Louis C.K. is, I mean, he's done some other stuff. Maybe he's not the best example, but like, you know, him compared to like a Harry Styles or something like that, you know, where it's like, okay, this guy, yeah.
Dude, what's a comedian you've met through doing what you're doing that you were shocked to meet or were excited to meet?
Who have I met? I mean, I've met Dane Cook. Mark Norman was cool because I really like his stuff.
Dude, a Louisiana boy.
Yeah. Oh, he is, right?
Yeah, he's from New Orleans.
Oh, that's right. Isn't Theo Vaughn also from New Orleans?
Yeah. I think he's more from Shreveport, but yeah, New Orleans okay. area, yeah.
Shreveport?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know what that is, but that sounds cool. Yeah. That sounds actually like an awful Shreveport. Place. That sounds like Shreveport, Louisiana.
I would not want to live in Shreveport, Louisiana.
God dang.
Theo Vaughn, yeah, he's got it. He's got that whole... Southern thing. Oh, he's locked it, dude.
It's just like a likability and the sound,
unbelievable.
And the vibe and stuff like that. It's just
he's really smart too.
He goes off vibes. Yeah.
He's so smart at playing this humble sort of. I wouldn't want to say dummy, but like the humble sort of like naive dude.
Yeah.
But when he brainstorms random things like, "Hey, Jamie, can we pull up something." You know, it's so smart, actually.
Yeah, no, that's hilarious. The likability around it. He's not trying to be like impressive or anything. The thing is, have you seen the interview with Trump?
No, I didn't know if I wanted to.
Okay, so he did an interview with Trump, and I gotta say that, regardless of what you think, what he did, his vibe was like he talked to Trump, which, regardless where you stand, is like a pretty big deal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He talked to Trump like a buddy, and he was not afraid to impress Trump. He was kind of asking dumb questions that the audience wants to know. You know, he's kind of like, he plays that role very well of like, just telling him stories like you would tell a buddy. And I was pretty impressed with that ability of just being that in such a, because there's Secret Service agents. It must be the most threatening. Is there any more scary podcast interview you could possibly do?
That's
especially
true.
Now in this climate with like the opinions on this, it's so hard.
I wonder.
Like, that must be so tough. Like, who else could you? I mean, maybe Putin might be tougher.
Because
Trump is maybe a little bit like more talkative than Putin. I don't know what to even start with Putin. Some guy interviewed Putin also. That was rough. Yeah.
I didn't. Oh, wasn't it Tucker Carlson?
I think so. Tucker Carlson. Yeah.
And Putin just went on like a 35-minute long
just
rant.
Just took
over the whole thing.
Yeah.
Got it. Well, at least, but you would suggest watching it, Theo and Trump?
Well, I think so. I think so. I think it was actually funny in a way. Also, it doesn't get too political. They just talk about like Trump just, they talk about addiction a lot. Like Theo talks about.
Didn't Trump not know that there was an opioid epidemic happening in the States or something?
I don't know about that. He talked about though. No, he talked, I think on, it was weird because it was weird how empathetic Trump seemed with that because Theo had been struggling with drugs and alcohol.
Right.
And then Trump was saying something like he lost a cousin or something to alcohol. So they were just kind of talking over that. And I was like, that was cool. I watched like half of it or something on the plane.
That is cool when you can see different parts of people that, again, you have this perception of them through
portrayed. Yeah. But it's so weird also. Like, I don't know. It's just such a weird world we live in now where if you think about Germany, that would never happen. Like Olaf Scholz or like a presidential candidate, like a candidate for being chancellor here.
Yeah.
They wouldn't just go on a random podcast and talk to your buddy, like talk to a dude about like, dude. And they talked about like others, like just like bro-y stuff.
Like how was that for you as a German in the States, like seeing the political landscape? I mean, not to get political, but like seeing how things like that are represented as opposed to what you're used to being, because it is so different.
Well,
like the news organizations being so different.
I mean, that was a big culture shock for me, for sure. One of the things that like shocked me the most was just coming to America and seeing news that are just highly sensationalized.
Absolutely.
Number one, it's like entertainment. However, I will say it is more entertaining. politics and news in Germany is very dry and very boring.
It's painful,
dude. I'm not gonna lie, even the election, I mean, it's, I hate how divided America is. It makes me really sad, actually, because I was traveling, I saw people on both sides, and I saw lovely people on each side. I hate that they hate each other. Just from a human perspective, it makes me sad.
Yeah,
but the election is fun. I mean, from an entertainment perspective, I mean, come on.
It's good entertainment.
You can't tell me that the debate between Biden and Trump, that's crazy.
Dude, that was
insane.
Unbelievable, yeah.
Even the one with Kamala, that's just something like in Germany, we'd never have that. It's just so, I have a joke about it. I don't know if I can swear on here, but like.
Yeah, you can, say whatever you want.
I mean, I just had a joke where I was like, you know, it's more fun in America because like in German politicians, when they run for office, they're like, yeah, please vote for me because I will increase the percentage of renewable energy to 73.5. Nobody cares, right? Americans, they're like, yeah, please vote for me because Kamala Harris is a fat, ugly bitch. Yeah, she can't even play golf. Yeah, she can't even hit the ball 50 yards. You know, it's just so much more like, I don't know, it's like a reality TV show,
like,
you know?
Like a recess fight, like a playground 100%, fight.
100%, yeah, yeah.
Like, he's always got boogers in his nose, and the other day he had a wedgie and there were skid marks on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what about the climate issue?
Exactly.
It's way more entertaining.
In Germany, it's much more about what the party stands for than the person. I mean, sure, it's about the person in a way, but not as much as in America.
Well, dude, even what's interesting here is how parties that will get the majority will share the responsibility together and compromise their beliefs in order to have the best functioning. Like, the biggest issue that they have is, like, tolls on the highway.
Yeah, yeah.
Think about that compared to the issues they're having in the States. Yeah. And it's like, such a spectacle there, which, again, it is more fun to watch.
It's more fun to watch. But
it simply is.
It's also, yeah, it's tougher. It's definitely more at stake. And
It's like you're paying for one thing to get the other thing.
Yeah, and I think the reason for that is, I just looked into this, I think also because in Germany, the Tagesschau, the main channels, are government-funded. Mm-hmm. So they don't have an incentive to be as profitable. Whereas in America, so you have CNN and Fox News. They kind of represent opposite sides of the political spectrum.
Yeah.
So they, and what's incentivized is negativity.
Right.
Extreme opinions, which...
Yeah, they're privately owned.
Which sells more ads.
Yeah, they sell ads.
And that is then what creates more divide. Yes. Because, again, negativity travels faster. And that's just how it is. So, Or you know, bashing the other side more, having an extreme... Maybe even having extreme... I think more extremist view just gets more views. I mean, look at people like Andrew Tate. Once you're like extreme, you get a lot of attention, right? So it's kind of, I think that's the big difference where, like, you know, in Germany, Tagesschau is just so...
It's so drab,
It's so dry. And we just defect in
you
America.
You just see the Germans like huddling in front of their TV. It's like 7:59. All of a sudden you hear that like, boing, that bell.
Yeah.
The show starts and it's just, I mean, what is it? 30 minutes, 25 minutes of just the most horrendously boring.
Yeah. I think it's 15.
I mean, thankfully, for 15, thankfully, like, unbiased, just, like, textbook facts.
Yeah.
But it's so painful. It's so painful to sit there and deal with it.
Do you watch that as an American?
I've seen it several times. I don't watch it every day, by any means. You know, I'd rather look at, like, Deutsche Welle, just sort of get scan of what's going on. But, man, that 8 o'clock news channel, like, whenever I'm visiting friends or, you know, people's houses and they religiously watch it, It's like such a culture spectacle for me to sit there with a group of people who are really like locked in on this woman. Usually it's a woman just standing in a sort of a suit that blends into this boring background.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, I'm used to like having like the captions under.
Oh, and, yeah. Flash, you
know,
flash, flash.
You know, like here comes the news like, dun, da, 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 da. Breaking news. You know, it's like engaging.
Yeah, breaking just, like, news.
It's 8 o'clock. Thanks for turning on,
like,
to the Tiger Show.
Much more sensationalized and things like that. Doesn't in the grand scheme, I mean, it's tragic, but it doesn't really matter. Like, you know, a 12-year-old shot his two cousins in Alabama, you know, on a farm. And these crazy like stories or like these crazy like crime stories too.
Unbelievable.
In LA, the news are like just always like woman, you know, killed herself in her 3-5 years, like. It's intense, dude.
Oh, I have to tell you, just because we're talking about how crime is represented in these different countries. So one time I was at the Munich Documentary Film Festival.
Okay.
And I was
with... That sounds like a blast.
It is. So rad, dog. We went in, a few of us sat down in the audience, and the documentary was a mixed language documentary, English and German, about a technology that people were testing out that I think is not going to happen anymore, but a technology they were testing out in different police stations in different cities in the US and in Germany to essentially try and predict, kind of like Minority Report, like predict based on an algorithm of people's previous histories with crime in certain neighborhoods, if they could predict maybe where a crime would be committed and maybe even by whom in a certain window of time.
Okay.
Didn't work out. I think it's also sounds pretty racist when you think about it. But they interview these different police chiefs in all these different cities, and the audience is dead quiet. Everyone's taking it very seriously. Yeah, yeah. And they go to the first one is like New York.
Yeah.
And like, hey, yeah, you know, last week over here we had Charlie Dickinson took his head off in front of the train, stopped all the subways. It was horrible. Lots of blood, you know. And they go to like Chicago. Another police chief is like, yeah, a woman slaughtered her three kids and like put their body parts in the trunks and drove them all around the area. LA is the same. It's horrible. And then they get to Munich and they interview these two cops on the street in their green suits and like, well, we've been noticing that over here next to the U-Bahn station, there's been a lot of bicycle stealing. So we're trying to profile who will be stealing the bicycles. And dude, the whole audience goes, ah! Like the whole audience laughs at this serious documentary. It's like, why would why would you put them in?
Oh my God, that is so funny. Because it's supposed to be serious, right?
Yeah, this like, looks hey, like this a technology skit. We're trying to really figure out. And then they're like, but yeah, with stealing bicycles.
Oh my God, that's so funny. No, but Munich is notoriously like one of the low, like in general, like I think Zurich is the city, like I looked it up, like the like big cities in the world, like I think Zurich is one of the ones with the least crime, like Singapore, Zurich.
Makes sense.
Because like, I mean, Zurich's also wealthy, but also I will say on like to also with America a little bit, it's very different countries. Like you can't compare Switzerland as much because a lot of people always shit in America saying, okay, if you compare, you know, Sweden is doing so well or like Switzerland is doing so well compared to the US. US is so, it's so tough to manage a country that's that big with that many different people. Like,
and they all want something else.
Yeah,
all,
I mean, it's so much more diverse. And diversity is a great thing, but it also brings a lot of challenges, right? I mean, like, if in Zurich, it's like, it's all Swiss people, you know what I mean? So, like, there's a bit more of a common ground and stuff. So, like, obviously, there's less friction there, and it's just easier to govern that place than, like, you know, a place like New York, where you have, like, every single person, belief, race, everything in one place, right?
That's so, true. Yeah. If you could, you'd want to move to New York, though, right?
I'd live in New York in a heartbeat. Yeah. I just have to stay in L.A. because, I mean, here's the thing. Also, like, there's two reasons. My wife, she loves L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And she works in fashion. And she works, I mean, fashion's great in New York, too. She's a network, though, in L.A. And she really likes the sun. She hates the cold. Even though she's from Chicago, okay? But, and she works a lot with movies. And, like, she's a fashion designer and stylist for, like, movies and stuff like that. So, she wants to be in L.A. I like LA. I just don't like it for comedy because New York's so much better. Also, though, we have a nice 3-bedroom in Los Angeles in West Hollywood with a dog park next to our place.
That's pretty hard to pass up.
If we had the same place in New York and I want to live anywhere decent, like, you know, even Manhattan or even close to that, like somewhere Williamsburg, Brooklyn, I pay like double. And I'm not even saying
that.
Yeah. I looked it up. Literally double.
Yeah.
You know, it's like insane. It's like 10 grand for like a 3-bedroom in Manhattan for that. Like, so probably not going to happen now.
It's so expensive.
What I want to do is once I can afford, I want to have a studio in New York just for me because I go there about once a month to do shows.
I was going to say, you must be going there all the time anyway.
All the time. So I have a friend right now who I can stay with. He's gone a lot. He's also German. He's leaving a lot. So whenever he's gone, I'm kind of taking over his place, paying his rent. But I want to, and that's great. But I think he's moving out in this year. So I want to get a place in New York next year.
Yeah.
But that's also like one more thing that's like shocking for me.
Yeah.
The rent and the prices in the US, especially LA, New York, because I went to New York from my town of 800 people in the Black Forest in Germany, where you can get, I mean, Munich is probably a very expensive city in Germany.
It is, yeah, it's very expensive here.
But nothing even remotely close to New York or LA. I mean, not even close to that. Even Berlin, which is a very cool city. I mean, my friend, we just talked about this, he pays like 3,000 euros, which is a lot, but he's like a 2-bedroom with like, on a high rise in like Mitte with like a gym, and it's awesome. I mean, that kind of place would cost you in New York, you can't even, I mean, that's crazy. That's again like probably 9 grand for a place like that in New York in a similar area.
At least.
Yeah.
At least.
Like 2 bedrooms, like a 1-bedroom in like New York in a nice building if it's like in Soho or something like that or even Chelsea. It's just like, it's ridiculous. Like 6 grand for 1-bedroom,
Dude. I think about that too. I think if money like wasn't an issue, where I'd want to live, and I think about New York pretty quickly every time.
Yeah.
It is just kind of that magical sort of city where there's just great opportunities for kind of everything you're interested in. Obviously, comedy is a huge part of
there's
that.
There's no place like New York for comedy, I think, in the world.
No, definitely. Man. One of my biggest regrets is like I was passing by the Comedy Cellar one time, and I was on the way to have dinner, and I just checked the sign to see who was on, and Todd Barry was coming in, and part of me was like, I'll never get the chance to go in the Comedy Cellar and see Todd Barry again, probably. But I didn't do it. I went and met the friends.
Because you had dinner and you had to be on time, otherwise, it would be a crime. Being not on time is the biggest crime.
Not on time
is... second biggest crime that we commit as drummers. <Yeah. laughs> There were some bigger ones. Oopsie, yeah.
Oopsie daisies, yeah. Oopsie. Yeah. I'll shot it.
It's always weird to complain about things like that as a German. It's always a little hypocritical.
Just a throwaway guy who's not on time. Yeah. Such a crime. Second place crime. Oopsie daisy. Our bad. Our hashtag bad. Never forget. No, please, actually forget. Forget it. Is it? I have to assume that, I mean... Probably not because of how good your English is and stuff and doing comedy, but and because you address it so much yourself, which I think helps. But do you get an uncomfortably sort of boring barrage of Nazi jokes at being a German in the States? Because even me, an American, when I visit home and I talk about Germany, it is the first thing that comes up.
Yeah.
And it, even for me, gets a little bit like, all right, guys.
Yeah.
Come on. That is not what Germany is at all anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, every time I do a show and I talk about Germany or something like that, it's like, you know, when you do a showcase show where like I'm not headlining, but somebody's going up after me, like at the Comedy Cellar or like other place in New York, you know, like you do show and then somebody goes after you. I mean, honestly, especially I have a lot of, in New York, so many Jewish comedians.
Yeah.
So obviously it's a very easy, it's almost like a, you know, it's almost like a, they have a little bit of
like
a penalty
like
kick,
an
you know,
or
yeah. So they're like, they bring up some Nazi reference, stuff like that, you know.
Sure.
Oh yeah, you know, yeah, he likes us, but he didn't like my grandfather, like stuff like that. There's so many jokes like that. Well, it gets a little boring, but also I started embracing it because I talk about it in my act so much now that people can't even talk about it after, you know what I mean?
You pulled an 8 Mile and like did all literally.
That is so true. That is so true.
It's the only way to do it. It's the like I can't imagine how much like that joke gets so boring after after one person does it in a setting.
Yeah.
It's like, rich, you know.
Yeah.
And then like when four other people do it,
yeah,
it's just not funny.
Man, and that's something I'm struggling because I'm
just
about,
not creative. Also, it's just not fresh.
Yeah. If it's a good joke that's unexpected in regards to that, it's great.
Then
but
it's great.
If it's like very just like low level basic reference, but I'm curious because I'm about to do a show. So I'm doing my tour right now in Germany for the first time, or like not a tour. I'm just testing out two cities, Berlin, London, to then do a full tour in spring. But I'm doing Berlin, London. And I'm curious how these jokes will actually translate specifically with the German. I'm not worried about London as much, but Berlin, because if there's
you're
more Germans.
You're worried about Berlin, you think?
Well, because I did, you know, I do these street interviews. I interview people at Oktoberfest and I ask them questions. I talk about like, you know, I make some like Nazi, a little bit like I make some Nazi jokes myself to Germans.
Mm-hmm.
They never laugh.
Really?
They never laugh at that. Americans
afraid to. I think they'll
love
think...
Nazi jokes.
Yeah.
And they will laugh about it.
Yeah.
Like, but Germans are a little bit like, it's a little too real for them. You know what I mean?
I had an experience once, even, I think Germans are a little afraid to laugh at something.
In general, maybe that's, maybe it's not a Nazi. Maybe it's just like, maybe it's not even specific to the Nazis. I was just like, I forgot there were Germans.
You're telling jokes to a wall, Mario. Okay.
Doesn't matter if it's a German wall or Mexican wall. Yeah. Who knows? Who cares?
Did you slide those things in? I had this, like, I think Germans are afraid, yes, to laugh, but to laugh at something that would make them look like they aren't aware of the significance of something.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know? Like, even one time I did a joke about when I was young as a really, really, really fat kid. And I like making fun of that because I'm a big guy now, but I wasn't as fat, like, as I was. And I showed a picture on we had like a projector. I was doing stories and I was like, something about this fat kid, he held on to this tighter than this guy held on to a cheeseburger. Easy throwaway. And it was just like dead. It was a warm crowd. It was doing well, but that one didn't land. And then later I talked to someone about it and I was like, why do you think that one didn't work? Was it just too cheesy? Was it too simple? And someone like, the Germans, they just kind of feel bad for you because they don't have that obesity issue here, and they don't want you to feel bad about yourself.
Yeah, because Americans, Like what?
You know?
Bigger comics in America always joke about that, right? I mean, it's kind of like a thing.
Yeah.
It's like the self-deprecation, but yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, man.
But maybe that's why the... But this interesting to talk about that with the... So Berlin, I could imagine, yeah, maybe you're worried about them. But it's also, it's so international there.
That's true. I mean, that's probably why, because like, a lot of my crowds are actually like not specifically Germans. Honestly, in America, it's a lot of, for some reason, Eastern Europeans. I have so many Russians coming to my... Like Russians who live in America.
Really?
Like first generations, or maybe even second gen, like Russians or Romanians, Bulgarians. Like, it's interesting. Like, it's not even Germans that much. Sure, it is, but not as many as you'd expect. You know, it's a lot of Europeans in general. Because they can relate on my perspective on America as a foreigner, whether you're Persian, Hungarian, or German. You know, it's all kind of like, you know, we all kind of make fun of it the same way.
Yeah.
But no, yesterday I did these three interviews and I asked like stuff like that. I asked like, who do you think is the most famous German person? You know, and they'd be like, Heidi Klum. I was like, okay, I'm trying to think, there's like one more that kind of left a bigger mark and stuff like that. And they were like, well, yes, but that is not a good thing. That is not a, and they were, that's so serious. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's clearly a joke. I was like, okay, do you like cheeseburger? Yeah. How do you feel about Hitler? I made it like something like really dumb. And they all got so serious about it, you know?
Whereas
like obviously like a funny little provocative like stupid question, you know, but I just noticed that vibe a little bit. Maybe Bavaria too.
It's interesting. Yeah, maybe Bavaria as well. Like you're in his Bavaria favorite city.
Yeah, literally. They have, yeah, this feels like the most, if there was a resurgence of the Fourth Reich, I think it would start in Bavaria. I'm not gonna lie, like that's, it has like some vibes for sure.
It's got all the seasonings.
It's ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like pop that bitch out of the oven. It's just ready to rock, you know.
Yeah. The ground has been laid, it's all ready. Yep.
Doing like a, it's a full hour you're doing on the, in Berlin, and you're doing the full hour now to prep for the spring tour, or is it you're doing old material now to prep for the new material then?
Oh, that's a good question. I haven't even thought that far. I think like this, because I've never done a European tour, so I'm probably going to do this a similar hour.
Yeah.
My goal is like right now I'm doing a lot of the German stuff. I'm aiming for a special in spring next year.
Awesome.
We're talking to people, possibly on YouTube, because YouTube's my main platform. I come from YouTube, right?
Dude,
so
it's the best.
And more like a German angle. I might call it my struggle. My struggle, full German comedy special. Because it's a lot about my struggle. It's a lot about my struggle as a German living in America. It's a lot about my struggle of like dating
so
a Jewish girl.
It's translates automatically. Like yeah. certain geo-blocked websites will translate it automatically.
Oh, man.
Sorry, I just thought of that.
Do you think Americans will actually... Because the thing is, I pitched this to some people because I thought about like a German with a dream. Some of it is about mommy issues too, but my struggle is just so powerful.
It's so good.
It's glorious. But no, do you think Americans even understand that this is the title of Mein Kampf in English?
Probably some listeners did until just now.
Yeah. Because that's kind of like where I'm at. But I don't know if they have to all understand it, because it's kind of like this.
Because the ones who do will go, "Oh my God, that's such a bold joke to make."
It's vague enough, because you know I do these reels right now, which by the way I don't know why they go so viral every time. But I do this joke where I'm like, you know, German, I'm like working out my shoulders, and then when I lift up my arm, I'm like nine, and every time I say "Mein struggle is real," you know. So it's kind of become a thing, and it kind of makes sense with the branding and everything. But yeah, so that's the goal. Anyways, the German stuff, it's a lot of German stuff. I talk about modeling a little bit, but I want to kind of do that to get that out of the way.
Yeah.
Establish myself with my first special, because I'm kind of new to comedy, like 4 years, right? So I have my first hour, put it out there. I feel very good about it. It's been great on this tour. And then I want to move more into some more serious topics too. And my goal is I want to talk. Have you seen Baby Reindeer?
Yes.
So I have a thing, and I don't know, get too dark here, but like I had some issues with sexual harassment and sexual assault when I was modeling. Mm-hmm. And that's something I feel very passionate about, and I think men should talk about more.
Yes.
So after this whole German block of things, which I love, I kind of want to graduate into more deeper topics too.
Yeah.
And I want to talk more about modeling, some of my body issues with modeling, some of the crazy stories with sexual harassment that are very real, but I think it's very important. So that's going to be the next thing I want to focus on after that tour. But I think the spring tour, I'm still going to do the older material and then focus more on the new stuff after the first special.
Dude, I can't think of like a more beautiful way to wrap it up. Actually, that was such a nice, succinct depiction of the tour you're doing now, where you plan to go. I have all your links and stuff in the show notes. Is there anything you want to plug other than the tour, the shows?
I mean, yeah, Instagram at Mario Adrian. We're going to do some videos together. Yeah. So, and then, yeah, MarioAdrian.com for all my tour dates and stuff. You know, I don't know, when once I start the tour again, yeah.
Awesome, dude. I can't thank you enough for coming here.
Yeah, it's super really fun.
I'm so happy to have you in my home.
Yeah, and, so cute, so cozy, yeah. So geselig, yeah. I love it.
So bequem.
So bequem.
Nice, dude. Thank you. And thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah.
Love you. Bye bye.
Auf Wiedersehen. Ja. Ja.
Ciao. Bis nächstes Mal. Look out, baby. The saints are coming through. And it's all over now. Baby blue. Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider. Produziert für M94.5.